From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1991 when a new schooling model was created known as EL, Expeditionary Learning. The Harvard Graduate School of Education joined forces with Outward Bound. Remember them? They envisioned a model of learning by doing, of experiencing nature, of journeying beyond the classroom. By 1993, the first 10 EL schools opened, mostly in larger American cities. And since that time, the model has expanded. And Rochester, the World of Inquiry School, is an EL school, which means K-12 students might find themselves eventually getting in a canoe, going rafting, solving problems in nature, maybe even staying overnight at Camp Cory. Think about the poverty rate in Rochester. Think about growing up in an urban environment. And now imagine what an EL school must be like for those students. And this year, there's a new program that's launched in Rochester called SSCE, which stands for Students, Science, and Civic Engagement, geared toward improving achievement for disadvantaged students. And here's an example of the kinds of projects they're doing. Students are working with the Genesee Land Trust to investigate the relationship between green spaces and a decreased crime rate. Well, this hour, we're looking at how diverse programming is creating opportunities for students from all backgrounds, whether it's in these programs, and later we'll talk about the IB program, so a lot to get to. Let me welcome our guests, and it is a packed studio. It's the last hour for our engineer, Valerie LeBanc, and we wanted to give her a challenge this hour. A lot of guests. Here from the World of Inquiry School, number 58, Chris Widmire is a science teacher there, and Chris and Davin Reddington are here, social studies teacher there. They are going to be talking to us about, among other things, Camp Pathfinder, camping experiences, and all these great outdoor experiences. Chris, welcome. Thanks for being here.
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
And Davin, thank you for being here
as
well.
Thank you for having us, yes.
Lindsay Cray is here, the executive director and co-founder of the Earthworks Institute. Lindsay, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And Alejandro Cruz Gobel is here, a sophomore at East High School and a participant in the SSCE program at the Earthworks Institute. Alejandro, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Keisha Reed is here. Keisha is a junior at the World of Inquiry School. Keisha, welcome to you.
Thank you.
I want to start with just Lindsay explaining what the Earthworks Institute is. So grab that mic and we'll start there. Lindsay, what is the Earthworks Institute?
So the Earthworks Institute is a nature education-based non-for-profit organization. We exist right here in Rochester, New York. And our goal is to work with all kinds of students and individuals within the community to get you connected with your community and thinking about sustainable ways to live in this community and doing lots of fun things that involve both you and your family and your friends outdoors.
SSCE stands for Student Science and Civic Engagement. Brand new?
Correct. Yes, brand new.
And how did that get going?
That's a great question. It's actually a kind of a complicated answer to that question, but I'll see if I can keep it short and sweet. So Earthworks Institute is tied in with the SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry in Syracuse, and SUNY ESF, they provided us with a curriculum that they teach to their college freshmen. It's called the Global Environment, and this curriculum is now being used between East High School and World of Inquiry School to provide a dual credit environmental science curriculum, I suppose. And tied in with that curriculum is also a research credit. So they get 3 credits for the curriculum, which is co-taught. In some cases, it's co-taught with me in the classroom helping the teacher. In some cases, for example, with Chris, the teacher teaches the whole class. And I manage the research portion of it because the students not only learn curriculum, but they also have to undertake a research project, which is tied in with some organization and some environmental aspect of conservation here in Rochester. And then upon finishing all of these things, not only will they have completed a research internship, also the college curriculum, and that's a total of 4 credits, which they are given through scholarship through Earthworks, but they also have this really incredible experience that helps them in the path to college and career readiness.
So I want to ask you, Lindsay, this, and we'll get the other teachers in the room to weigh in on this, and then I want to hear about the students' experience with these various programs. But I think there is, in many ways, a stereotype about learning in the city of Rochester, that schools are struggling, opportunities are limited. And when people hear about these kinds of programs, I think it's probably a surprise to some people. Now, granted, maybe we wish the scale was bigger, we can do even more of this. But to you, what are the impacts you see with students who get these opportunities to engage in these kind of projects, to learn in these kind of settings?
Those opportunities, those impacts are, in my opinion, endless. The students not only learn this higher level curriculum, but the curriculum is not your standard curriculum. It allows them to think outside the box about environmental science, to think about their ecological footprint, to think about how their impacts happen globally and locally, and how those things globally happen to them locally. They also understand what it means to take on a level of responsibility, to be responsible for themselves and their own work, to know that there are people out there in the community, like folks from the Genesee Land Trust, like SUNY Brockport, RIT, the Nature Conservancy. All these people are interested and care about what they're doing, that they have job opportunities that are available to them, internship opportunities that are available to them. They understand what it means to be impactful in their own community, because the work that they do is directly relevant to what's going on here in Rochester. So the list could go on.
Chris, for you, what is your answer to that when you see students get this opportunity? And I don't want people to think that EL means you're getting in a canoe every day. But, you know, tell me about what the program is like and the opportunities that you see for students.
Yeah, there's a lot of research that says that this kind of learning is very powerful and very important for building skills of communication, skills of collaboration, building the skills that lead to critical thinking. So by asking students to do incredible things in the classroom, we're asking them to think of themselves as being incredible. And so we are able to provide these experiences with the partnerships. I think that's a huge piece of it, is that we are able to make partnerships with organizations that allow us to broaden the experiences that students have. And that's a really important piece.
All right. Like who, Devin? What are the kinds of partnerships he's talking about?
So they are widespread, and we find them in ways that we oftentimes don't see coming. A big one for us was 10 years ago, we got involved with the Algonquin Campership Fund, which was a series of alumni from Camp Pathfinder, which is a Rochester-owned camp that's in Algonquin Park, Canada. And they have been graceful and gracious funders of us for 10 years. Wilson's program goes up there. Chris and I have moved. We started off at Wilson, and we've moved now to the World of Inquiry, and we take our program up there as well. So Scott Forsyth, Trip Pearson, Michael Sladden, those are local businessmen and civic leaders that have been kind of leading the charge for their alumni to donate. That's been a great partnership for us. We work with the Rochester Museum and Science Center. Nathan Hayes has been really, really valuable. Miss Cray and her program has been great. Like, that's a find that we just happened to cross paths with. And actually, I worked with Lindsay the first time at the Monroe County Parks this year. Larry Staub and his people have been really, really happy to embrace city kids going out into different parks. So they've been very open to us and very flexible with you know, meeting the needs that we have. Pat Browse, too, is another one that is a great partnership for us and for Wilson and for other schools through the Rochester Education Foundation. She is... they have dynamic programs that offer a lot of opportunities to kids in a variety of ways, whether it's buying instruments or books. They support both of our schools with fundraising and managing funds for us to do, and it allows us freedom to do kind of whatever projects or programs that we're into.
All right, so hold on. Back it up to Algonquin here. I mean, how often are you going up there?
So at this point, Wilson goes up every spring for a 4 or 5 day trip, and the World of Inquiry goes up every fall. So we've got, you know, two sets of several dozen kids going up each year.
Is this like a Monday to Friday? Leaving Monday, coming back Friday?
It's usually 4 to 5 days, yes. Oftentimes we try to incorporate a weekend in there.
And how many kids go?
Between 30 and 36.
Wow. So. Yeah. And you guys go too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's part of this whole campaign of realizing that that kind of thing is the learning, that we also partner with SUNY ESF to bring students up to their field station for 3-day leadership trips, along with, I can remember being out in a canoe with somebody that had otter artifacts and taught us all about otters from a canoe, and we were all surrounding her with our canoe, and that was part of the global environment class. And then lots of experiences that happen just here locally, too, that field studies are as big a part of our program as we can make it.
You know, to some degree, I mean, I'm thinking about what it must be like for kids to get a chance, because they're how old when they go to Algonquin, when they go up to Camp Pathfinder?
10th through 12th grade.
Okay, right. And so, my father went to Camp Pathfinder for years, And it's where he invented something called Yabbit stew. On the last day, any food that's left over, you're throwing it in the pot. Doesn't matter what it is, you know. And I went to and worked at a YMCA camp on Chautauqua Lake called Camp Anyasa. And for me, that was always great fun. But we always had campership recipients, kids coming for a week, kids maybe coming for a month. And the change that we observed, just as counselors, was remarkable. And so for me, it shifted from, you know, a fun place that's pretty expensive, privileged, sort of centric, to opening up opportunities that wouldn't otherwise be there. And apart from fun, you're saying, that's not just fun, that's educational. That could be life-changing. Fair?
Yeah, and one of the examples that I can think of right now, in addition to Keisha, we'll let her share her experience, but one of our students at TIM right now is in a class at Nazareth College. We have some of our high school students taking a class at Nazareth. And on the way home the other day, she was talking about going to Camp Pathfinder, and it started with the trip we take to Camp Cory in 7th and 8th grade, and her talking about how she never would have imagined herself being somebody that was like being in the outdoors.
A camp person.
Yeah.
So it's interesting you mentioned the YMCA camps. We've got great partnerships with Michelle Rocliffe and the YMCA camps. Keisha's actually been to Gorham and Cory through our school program, so she can definitely speak to the impact as an individual.
All right, so Keisha, you've been where now?
Been to Camp Cory and Camp Gorham, and yeah, it's really fun.
All right, so you've been to Cory and Gorham. So mm-hmm. Where are you going next?
Hopefully Pathfinder.
Okay, what do you hear about Pathfinder?
I hear that it's very fun, and it it makes you just really want to be outside. And for me, I'm a outdoors person, so I really like going to camps. My teachers know that I really like being outside and, like, you know, just helping others.
You don't mind having a canoe paddle or a paddle in your hand?
No.
No?
I actually like kayaking, so I like to be alone.
But you don't mind being working with a group?
No.
Okay. So Pathfinder, you know, is something that you want to do. But when you, let's say you grew up in Rochester, you're living in Rochester now.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, you know, in your younger years, were you an outdoors person? Did you like being outside?
All the time.
You
I was
did.
Never home, always outside playing in the dirt, always getting dirty. So it's nothing new for me. It's like, you know, I'd rather be outside than inside.
Did you have access to parks, green space as much as you wanted? I mean, except sometimes the ideas in Rochester, it's harder to find.
Yeah, not really. I never really went to parks. I was just always playing, like, with other kids that lived on my street, but we never really went to a park.
So you went to camp. You went to Camp Cory first or Camp Gorham?
Camp Cory.
Camp Cory first. Mm-hmm. How long ago was that now?
That was eighth grade.
Eighth grade.
I went. Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
It was very fun. Like, we did a lot of things. Like, we did zip lining, and it was just a lot of activities we did. That was the first year I did the polar bear, and, like, it was...
Hold on, polar bear, is that the morning swim?
Yeah.
See, at Anyasa, they do this thing. It's, like, 6 a.m., and it's first call, polar bear. And everybody just rolls over, and nobody is getting up to go jump in an ice-cold lake.
That's required, actually, for our students.
Yeah,
it's required? Polar bear is required?
It's part of the experience. No, so.
But did you like it?
Yeah. Well, at first, I was cold.
Yeah,
but
who likes that, right?
It was an accomplishment. I got to say, well, I did it.
Because you're jumping in, it's Cuca Lake.
Yeah.
Camp Cory. Jumping in. And even Cuca Lake in the middle. Well, let's see here. What time of year was that? Was that... You guys are going on the one night.
September, usually.
In September. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the water's not too bad.
Yeah.
A little chilly in the morning.
Yeah.
What else do you remember from that experience?
I remember, what was it, the bow and arrow? That?
Oh, archery, yeah.
Yeah, archery. I remember that. And just, like, spending a lot of time outside around, like, campfires and stuff, just hanging out with teachers and friends, and, you know, it's a whole nother different vibe outside. And, you know, we all can just spend time together in school or, like, do field trips, like regular schools and stuff like that. But when we're outside, it's a whole nother different type of feeling, and everyone feels closer, and it's better.
Keisha, do you feel like when you're there that you are learning, or are you just having fun?
Both.
You do feel like both.
I feel like I'm more engaged. Like, when we learn about stuff outside, I feel like I'm able to pay attention more than, you know, sitting in a boring classroom or something like that. So, yeah, it's both.
All right. And do you find that you and your friends, are you able to, and I'm not saying this in a condescending way, I'm just asking, Are you able to kind of put the cell phone down for a while and focus on?
I don't even think they allowed it, but we didn't even miss it.
You like don't
it
miss
was
it.
Like yeah,
I
it
love
was just
hearing
like
that.
It was just like yeah.
I love hearing fun. That. So Algonquin, what are you looking forward to most if you go to Pathfinder?
I like zip lining. So hopefully I could do that again and just like learning more about the outdoors and yeah, just being out there with my friends.
Well, Keisha, I also want to ask you what you think about, you know, I don't know if you have younger siblings, but probably you've got friends who've got younger siblings, you know, and everybody grows up in a different situation at home. But in the city, there's a lot of kids who don't get to do a lot of what you've been doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about are you concerned that there are students in the city who will grow up and don't have that experience? They're not outside, they're not experiencing nature much. They'll go all the way through high school, graduate or not, and not have that experience. You know, does that concern you?
Yes, it does a lot because I feel like being outside can change you as a person. Like, it just makes you get more engaged with the community around you and more aware of things. And that's one of the things that I've been working with Lindsay and the Earthworks Institute. We've been doing a study on how that can actually affect the urban youth in Rochester. And yeah, so I really do worry about that. I feel like whenever I'm around younger kids, like when I'm with my friends, younger siblings, I always suggest, let's go outside, let's do something like that. Let's put the TV remote down and the laptop and all of that down, and yeah, so.
Well, Lindsay, you were smiling. Is that related to what I mentioned at the intro, the Genesee Land Trust? Can you tell us about that?
It's not actually related to the Genesee Land Trust. The Genesee Land Trust is one of many organizations that volunteers to be research mentors with each of our students. So each student has a different research project unless they work in pairs. So Keisha has a research partner, and that's Jacolby. And so those two in particular have been working together with us at Earthworks Institute, and one of our board members is serving as their mentor. And their research, just like Keisha said, their research is on how spending time outside and participating in wilderness survival type programs and challenges will affect the feelings of youth empowerment, and especially they're focusing that on urban youth.
The relationship between green spaces and youth empowerment, decreased crime rate, I mean, all those things tie together?
In Keisha and Jacolby's particular study, I think we're gonna find that out. We have to wait till the rest of the data comes in. We do have another set of students who are working out of East to focus, who are focusing their research specifically on how exposure to green spaces or living within proximity of green spaces affects decreasing crime rate.
So you at least suspect there's a logical link there, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's as a quote unquote ex research scientist, there is a ton of data that supports that. But I'm just going to let those students do their work.
Absolutely. So Chris and Devin, I mean, I love hearing about her experience and the impact. And my guess is that's exactly what EL is supposed to be. Is it? I mean, she's almost like the poster child of EL, yeah?
Absolutely. And one of the ideas behind EL was that to take that Outward Bound experience, and the history of Outward Bound was a program that was started in Europe to kind of jumpstart soldiers to become, or the sailors to just have experiences that would allow them to deal with stressful situations. And
is this the one, by the way, forgive me, is this the one where I had heard, and I could be totally wrong, they're dropping you in the middle of the nowhere and good luck to you?
That can be part of the Outward Bound experience.
Okay.
And actually, Davin and I have both had the opportunity as adults to go on full-on Outward Bound experiences through EL, which mine didn't include a solo, but I think Davin's.
We had a solo night. We didn't get dropped off. We were left out in, you know, relatively remote. You know where you are, but it was really valuable to give people individual opportunities to have time by themselves. And the trip I went on was all teachers too, so we certainly appreciate the peace and quiet.
Peace and quiet, but self-sufficiency, all of those skills that you have to employ there. And you know, we've been talking about Algonquin and Camp Cory and these experiences, and that's not every day for these students, but what's more of the week-to-week in EL?
So, and that was part of the idea behind Expeditionary Learning Schools, was to figure out what it was about those experiences that was so powerful. and bring them into the classroom. And we have what are called learning expeditions. And in a learning expedition, there's a guiding question and some sort of final product and something that the students need to investigate, that they're brought into an experience that gives them the, like, we need to figure this out. And so that can start in Keisha's 7th and 8th grade. We did a big expedition on skin color and how skin color has made an impact over history. And Davin and I kind of sat down with other teachers and designed this experience that the relationship of skin color to history, but then also the relationship of skin color to genetics and evolution. And then we built a website around the work that the students did. The students created the materials for that website, which was a really powerful and meaningful experience, both for the teachers. I think that's also a big piece of it, is creating something that is more than, like Keisha was saying, that I'm just in a classroom, that we're doing something powerful. And then that leads to, today we just had an Earth Day Expo, where the students in the global environment class each have their own projects, and we invited all of the students K-11 up to our classroom today to show off these projects, and everything from Keisha and Jacoby's empowerment and wilderness skills to a lead and phytoremediation project that some other students are doing with Lidzi, to a windmill that students put together a Donors Choose proposal and found $600 through the community to get us this windmill that we're going to put on top of our school to make electricity for cell phones and stuff. So it's that powerful experiences that are transformational, I think, is the biggest way that translates into the classroom.
Davin? I think, so the question you asked Keisha about whether they were actually learning, I think one of the benefits too, which we don't, Chris referred to it, but we don't think about it enough when we design schools, is the experience of the teacher. So with the teachers that go on these experiences with the kids are able to come back and consistently, you know, draw out of those kids long-term the experience and relive it and rehash it and apply, you know, you overcame challenges in an environment that was very unfamiliar, maybe with people you weren't familiar with. If you can do that, then certainly, you know, this academic task where you have all the resources around you or you have the guidance of your teachers and other people, it becomes much less onerous if they're able to compare those two. And if the teacher's familiar with what the kid's background is, it's much easier to push them on to, you know, the next big challenge. And they're also, I think, students are able to equate the difference between, you know, I've overcome these challenges that seemed so impossible and so unfamiliar. I've seen other people do, you know, the academic stuff. I can definitely do this. I mean, it's exposing them to, you don't know what you don't know. So I think we don't have to teach them everything. Just experience that there's a much larger world out there, and they'll get a sense that once you start to accomplish tasks that seemed undoable, they can apply that to anything they want to, you know, a tackle in life.
Sure, and I just, you know, in my sort of outsider's view of these kind of programs, I would think more advantaged school district and more advantaged kids, these kind of opportunities are more common. The concern is, you know, if we have a segment of the population, usually in urban districts, but not always, that doesn't get these kind of opportunities, you say you don't know what you don't know. You may not even know about a career you'd want. You may not even know about something you'd want to do. I mean, Keisha, I don't know what you're going to do, you know, in your career, but does this make you think about more opportunity?
Yes, a lot. I mean, I always wanted to be an enzymologist / biochemist since 7th grade, thanks to Mr. Whitmire. And this has opened my eyes to a lot. Like, maybe I want to explore not just that, but maybe other things like in the environment, or maybe I can help the environment through that. So, like, yeah, it has changed a lot.
The career you just described, it's a lot of work.
I know.
I'd be very impressed. When I graduated from Ohio University on the last day, my wife-to-be made me step inside Clippinger Hall just to say I did, because in journalism, you play a lot of euchre. So, you know, it's I'm very impressed. But, I mean, I just think that's exactly what these kind of programs are aiming to do. I want to talk to Alejandro about some of his experience, particularly Alejandro in CCSC. We'll re-explain what that means. You are a sophomore at
East.
Yes,
sir.
How's it going at East High School?
It's going good.
Especially, this has been an interesting year at East High School. A lot going on there.
Yes, sir.
Environment, everything is solid? Everything's good?
Yes, sir.
Well, very good. Well, let me just remind our listeners what CCSE means, and I'm scribbling back through my notes. It's SSCE, Student Science and Civic Engagement. Tell me about your role in that program.
I actually wanted to do research on education because we learned that education has an impact in our everyday life. And with the help of Lindsay, we found an old growth called Washington Grove. And I wanted to do research on off-leash dog walks in Washington Grove and how it impacts the natural environment. And
hold on a second. Off-leash dog walking.
Yes, sir.
Oh, cool. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, and even though it's illegal, people still participate
in
the activity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And now Lindsay, she gave me connections with Andrew Seeger, who is with Friends of Washington Grove, and he actually had me out there and get a feel of the natural environment. So we're just collaborating and creating a brochure on the information and actually creating surveys, just gathering the data and, yeah.
Well, so you got a hard job, Alejandro, because technically they're not supposed to be walking the dogs off leash, right?
Yeah.
So how do you do research about something people might not want to tell you about?
Yeah, so we had that situation, but we're actually doing an anonymous survey. So without any names or anything, we're just going out there, getting our iPad and having the dog owners, even if they're not participating in that situation, answer the anonymous survey.
So they're obviously more comfortable to tell you if it's going to be anonymous. And so have you started doing that that process yet?
We're actually doing it starting tomorrow. Yes, sir.
And do you have any sense for what you think you're going to find?
Well, I already had a feel, and we already seen dog tramplings that weren't supposed to be there, and feces and all that stuff. And yeah, I think I already know that there's.
So you have an idea on what you might find, but
yeah,
the research will be the research. And then what could come out of this? What would it be one of the goals of that?
Yeah, actually influencing dog owners not to participate in that activity anymore and spread the word to other friends and families. And we're actually, Andrew Seeger is planning on, it's not for sure, but he's having meetings with the city, actually creating a dog park near, and they just need a data actually for people to attend the dog park and you actually utilize it on a daily basis or weekly basis. And he actually have me and Lindsay collaborate to try to find that out for them.
It sounds like it's one thing to say people shouldn't do something, but it's another to say, hey, we have data now that shows how this impacts people from, other dog owners who are following the rules to leaving dog droppings to impact on environment, all of those things.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, it sounds like this is the kind of thing that could actually make change.
Yes,
sir. Can I ask Lindsay a little bit about that? I mean, that's, to me, this is a good sort of hands-on experience, but I would think it's, for someone who's a sophomore, right, Alejandro, a sophomore?
Yes, sir.
It's not easy to come up exactly with the right research project, and this sounds like they're doing it.
Right. So that's the goal, is to allow them to spend some time at the beginning of the course figuring out what interests them, because it's less motivating to have somebody tell you what you should be researching and more motivating to be putting that time and effort into something that you feel you're really passionate about. And so when we were talking about the old growth forest, which is Washington Grove, and it's actually not a lot of people know that Washington Grove is located right in the center of the city and it's accessible to everybody. It's on the backside of Cobbs Hill Park. It's a beautiful old growth forest, and there's a lot of issues in there involving invasive species, but then also involving just the way humans use the park. And so I think that Alejandro kind of has this big affinity towards why do people do things if they cause issues with the environment. And so we kind of worked through that question and said, well, what if they were more educated about it? Does education have an impact? And I said, I don't know, we should find out and see what happens. So that connection with Andrew Seeger and the Friends of Washington Grove, they are the nonprofit that oversees the management of that area. That was key. That was critical. And to have him doing this, to have the student, Alejandro, who's an amazing student, he's very smart and deserves this opportunity to take his passion and put it to work in the city, in the community, to have him pair up with somebody from the community that wants to help him and then take that data and make it useful in a very widespread way, aka the dog park that they're potentially thinking about putting there. That's exactly what we want for this program. We want the students to play an integral role in the way their community works.
Yeah, one more question for Alejandra, if I could, just because Linda just mentioned that you could learn about this kind of a process in a class sitting at a desk,
yeah,
or you could learn when you go out and do it.
Yeah.
Are you someone who learns better by doing it? Everybody's a little different. Some people are visual learners. Some people are audio learners. How do you learn, you think, more effectively?
More effectively, I think the lecture and to get all the information in my head and actually know what I'm doing first, and then actually going out there and doing the research hands-on and actually knowing in my eyes what's the impact.
I mean, I would definitely think, you know, Chris, I'm looking at you. I mean, these are the kinds of opportunities that, again, I mean, for kids who sit in a class and they don't feel like they're making a connection, it's easy to go through school and feel like, I don't care about this. I don't feel connected to it. I don't know what the impact is to me. This is exactly the way to kind of get around that, to beat that.
Absolutely. And it goes in a lot of different directions where the relationship to them, to what you're learning and the relevance, the actual need for the work to get done. I mean, that's, you know, how many people can think about how many hours they spent in school doing things that were nobody was going to see after the teacher handed them back to them, you know, versus petitioning the city or presenting research to the city about how people are using parks is very motivating. And then it does connect to the traditional things that students need to learn in school. And we're all very aware of that at World of Inquiry and in Expeditionary Learning Schools, that like teaching literacy is something that we take very seriously. And Lindsay has got the students working with her sitting down and reading scientific articles that many undergraduates wouldn't even tackle through their program. So, you know, they're sitting down and they're really trying to read through these things, or they're, you know, talking to experts. We do a lot of talking to experts at our school and listening, that listening for information and actively understanding what people are saying are a big part of what we do. So it both connects students that may not normally be connected to those sorts of things, and then at the same time, students that are comfortable sitting and listening or sitting and, you know, just reading, it pushes them to do a little bit more too. I work with seniors, and one of my biggest things that I'm trying to get them to do is to reach out to experts on their own. And that's, you know, I say as you go to college, you're going to need to go to the registrar and say, look, there's something wrong with my bill this month. And so the sooner you can get comfortable with that task, the better off you'll be. So there's a lot of different ways that this kind of learning has a benefit.
All right, before we get our short break in and shift gears here, let me just ask the teachers who are on this panel right now, are these kind of programs likely to grow? I mean, this is this is an educational opportunity that is, I think, obviously powerful for the students we're meeting, but it's somewhat limited, you know, district-wide. So are we going to see more of it?
Well, that's why we came on the Evan Dawson show. So I think,
what don't I know here, Dad?
I mean, speaking to the audience out there, teachers need to realize that this is not magic. It's just, you just need to start. And if you start in baby steps, that's fine. Just make progress and be willing to take some risks and ask your, you know, the upper levels if they can support your ideas. And I'm sure that there are all kinds of opportunities around schools to get kids outside or to bring in experts. I mean, Earthworks can work with anybody. I mean, your area of expertise in the physical space that they serve is counties wide. So teachers can do a lot to bring their own classes in. School districts can certainly embrace this idea. And the growing evidence is our students are finding out is that this is all very relevant and obviously supported. And then as listeners, people can support this too. There's a lot of organizations locally, from the Algonquin Campership Fund, the Rochester Education Foundation. They can find places to donate. They can find like-minded organizations to volunteer with. to support. There's a lot of ways that you can encourage schools and just communities in general to embrace the outdoors and to embrace bringing the outdoors into classrooms. And also, I mean, it's not just the outdoors, it's the outside of the classroom, the expeditionary and experiential learning. It's much more accessible, I think, than we oftentimes are led to believe. It's not as cutting edge as it might appear. And it just takes a little bit of risk taking in the beginning, and you can open all kinds of doors.
Well, have fun, by the way, if you go to Algonquin.
Thank you.
I hope you do. I hope you have a great time there. Alejandra, good luck. Lindsay, are you going to try to grow the work that you're doing with Earthworks?
Absolutely. All it takes is a phone call and interested teachers and schools, and we are ready to team up with anybody else that wants to see this happen for their students. We started off small with two schools, and we are most certainly looking forward to growing.
Thanks for being here, Lindsay, Chris, Davin. Good luck to you guys, the students here. Let's get a short break and learn about a different program, but I think also a very powerful one in the Rochester City School District. That's next. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, we sit down with School Board President Van White from the Rochester City School District. He doesn't like Mayor Lovely Warren's proposal to give the mayor more control of struggling schools. White said it would divide the district and the city. He'll explain why. Then in our second hour, there's a big Shakespeare anniversary coming up. We'll spend some time with the Bard and tell you about some local events. It's all Friday.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Rochester International Children's Film Festival, with screenings throughout the month of April at libraries, schools, and childcare centers. Information and a schedule of screenings online at raeyc.org.
Atsa Schmidt lost a son to suicide. Then she started a hotline in her country, Greenland, to save the next generation.
That first night, I remember it very clearly because my first call was from a man who needed help.
A story of survival in a place where suicide has hit crisis levels. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're going from the canoes to IB. I grew up outside Cleveland, and you know, there was a baccalaureate program there, but I wasn't a baccalaureate student. I never knew much about it, to be honest with you. And we're about to learn a lot more about it with Teresa Sarkis-Cruz, who's coordinator of the International Baccalaureate Diploma Program at Joseph Wilson Magnin High School. Teresa, nice to see you here. Thanks for being here.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And also here, a couple of students, Nadine Flores-Trapani, who's a freshman at RIT and an IB program graduate. Nadine, welcome.
Thrilled to be here.
And Andy Adkins is a senior at Joseph Wilson Magnin High School and a student in the IB program going to Duke. Andy?
Yes, yes.
Congratulations.
Thank
nice
you.
To see you
Thank
here.
You so, much.
So I remember hearing about baccalaureate growing up, and I made this assumption, Teresa, that every school had it and you could join it or not, and I was way wrong about that. So tell me about what IB is.
Right. So that's one of our challenges. We want to really educate the public on what IB is. So it was developed in 1970 by a group of expats traveling around the world, dismayed at the discrepancy among educational systems. So they wanted to standardize a college preparatory program and develop the International Baccalaureate Organization. At Wilson, we began our program in 2000, so we're actually one of the longest-standing urban programs, IB programs. Since the inception in 1970, IB has grown dramatically to include K through 12. So it started out with just 11th and 12th grade, strictly college prep.
That's all I remember, yep.
Right. But now in the district, we have three of their four programs. So we have the primary years program, K through 5, at Wilson Foundation down the street from us on Genesee Street. And then we have the middle years program that's split between two buildings, Wilson Foundation and Wilson Magnet. And that encompasses 6, 7, 8, and 9, and 10. And then we have the diploma program, for which I'm the program coordinator, and that's grades 11 and 12. They've also added a careers pathways program, which is a lot like expeditionary learning, where they have a co-op component to it. You can study things like pre-engineering and nursing, and we're investigating possibly adding that on to our school. But I just want to talk about, we have a lot of similarity between 58, and a shout out to Devin and Chris because they started the outdoor club in our school, which still thrives and it's been fantastic. The kids can talk about it a little bit.
Andy was just kind of, did you raise the roof? What
yes,
were you doing
I
now?
Just raised
you're raising the roof. All right.
Outdoors club is like one of the best clubs at Wilson, along with the robotics club. And I actually went to Pathfinder last year,
oh,
the
very
year before
cool.
with Reddington and Chris.
Very cool. All right, so we'll get to that, but go,
right.
go ahead.
Right, so the big similarity, I think, between our two schools is really at the center of all of this is the learner. So IB said right away, we want our kids to be able to research. So we have what's called the extended essay. It's a 3,500 to 4,000 word essay that the kids produce by their senior year. And actually, it's really in conjunction with the University of Rochester Research Librarians. For 9 years, we've had a program where we will go over and we'll study in the library for a week, and the research librarians will help the students find resources and shape their topics. That's been, I mean, that's incredibly generous. While Davin and Chris were speaking, I was thinking of we live in a tremendously generous community. We're so fortunate. So at the center, you know, of all of the coursework is the extended essay and then a theory of knowledge class the kids can talk about, which looks at knowledge across all disciplines. So you basically figure out how does a scientist think maybe differently from an artist or what are the similarities, that sort of thing. And then the third thing at the center of all of the academics is community service. The students are required to perform 150 hours of community service.
And so, Teresa, how many students right now are in the IB program?
So right now, our school is an IB World School. So all of our students are IB students because we have the 9th and 10th grade middle years program. And once you get to 11th grade, you can choose a full diploma program, which means that you would take a course in every subject area. So language, foreign language, arts, science, mathematics. And then you could be a full diploma student taking one course in each one of those, or you could be a certificate student taking one of those classes. And we have a commitment, it's called IB for All, that every student in our building will take a higher level class in 11th or 12th grade.
And so how many total are going to graduate with an IB degree?
Okay, so right now we have 40 seniors in the full diploma program. Possibly, you know, generally we've run about 25% to 30% to 40% of the students will get the full diploma program. 100% of them will graduate. 100% of them will get accepted to good colleges, and often with a very good financial package.
But I'm not at all casting doubt. I mean, I believe you. I'm just saying that it's a rigorous program.
It's tremendously rigorous.
I mean, how are you getting 100% to graduate?
100% will graduate from Wilson. And 25% to 30% will graduate with the diploma.
With that IB diploma.
And
okay.
Actually, the diploma comes out in July, long after the kids have accepted and figured out where they're going to be going to college.
Okay. All right. So, but it is a rigorous program.
Very rigorous.
Okay.
The girls can speak to that.
I want to talk to the students about what they kind of have gone through. And I'll start with Nadine, who's a freshman at RIT, IB program graduate. And for you, you got into the IB program when, Nadine?
I originally went into the program in 11th grade, and I'm actually one who didn't graduate with the diploma, but I still feel like the program itself is very beneficial.
Oh, okay. All right. So
yes.
You're in the program.
Yes.
And you credit it with helping you in what way?
And it helped me deal with college. Like, I believe just from my older siblings and family members and friends who weren't in the IB program, they struggle a lot more adapting to college with the rigorous work and doing the essays and et cetera because they weren't exposed to the rigorous program that IB is. So I feel like I'm more adept to being in college, and it was a little bit easier for me stress management-wise, prioritizing, organizing, all that stuff. Like Sarkis said about the extended essay, it helps us with going with U of R, and we also have we had a teacher who would help us with our research essay, helped us find credible sources and to do in-depth research on things that we enjoy, not just any topic, but something we truly enjoyed.
Like, so for example, what's something that you enjoyed?
Mine's a little weird. Mine was the cultural diffusion of anime.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cultural diffusion of anime.
Throughout the world, yes.
Did you get into anime, you know, early in life? You always liked it?
I think, like, I started watching it in, like, middle school, mm-hmm. and I'm 20 years old, and I still do. But it was something I was always interested in, and I learned so much about it. For instance, Tupac. In 2012, he had a hologram performance with Snoop Dogg on stage. Believe it or not, that software was created before for a anime character who they brought to stage on life to do a hologram show of her singing. And she went throughout the countries, even America, and an anime person, not even real, just fake voice and everything, was doing concerts throughout the country. And people in California everywhere just buying tickets like crazy.
Now, are you breaking any news? I thought Tupac was dead, no?
He is dead. It's okay. A hologram.
Oh,
hologram.
He's okay.
Yeah, it's a hologram.
Okay.
So I'm sorry. It's a
dead.
Hologram program.
Dead.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. So for you, though, this is the kind of program that when we talk about Rochester City School District students, when we talk about what college ready really means, that is a big sore spot for the district. You know, how many students are quote-unquote college ready? It sounds like you have no doubt that you were college ready because of the rigor. Yeah,
definitely. Because, I mean, in high school, you have those couple essays. They're like 2-3 pages. You got like a few weeks to do them. Versus college, you get a 5-6 page essay. You have to turn it in 3 days later with 35 sources and this and that. And that's like you have 5-6 classes and you're doing this all within a semester. So the rigorous work, doing all this, a short timeline, a lot of those finals all within like 1 week, it really prepares you for all that stress that's going to hit you in college that most people are not prepared for.
And you're wrapping up your freshman year at RIT?
I'm actually technically going into my second semester pretty soon of my second year of college,
okay.
Not freshman.
And how's it going?
It's going pretty well. RIT is very welcoming. I intend to actually change my major. I'm currently liberal arts, but I'm thinking of going to business. And it's really fun. It's a great college. I love the environment of RIT, and I love staying locally. And, you know, I get to do things with my school and community. And that's another thing that this program's really helped me with, the CAS Hours Community Action Service. It really helped me get in tune with my community.
Very cool stuff. Andy Edkins is a senior at Wilson Magnin High School and a student in the IB program. And you're going to Duke.
Yes, I am.
Going to study what?
Economics and public policy.
Economics and public policy.
Yes.
Very good. So what is your research subject?
It's actually economics and public policy centered. My research question is, how does the U.S. education system perpetuate racial disadvantages in the institutional systems? I moved here from the suburbs in Orlando, and I moved here 3 years ago, and I was really shocked at, like, the state of the Rochester City School District. And so with IB, I was able to, like, explore that. And so I started with the personal project that you do in 10th grade, and it was, like, a 20-page essay. I did research, did surveys, interviewed people, and I put together this essay and was able to, like, explain to people and know for myself what's the difference between urban school districts and suburban school districts. And then when I got into the DP or the diploma program, I got to extend that and do it for my extended essay. And like Ms. Sarkis said, we go to U of R, we talk to people, we talk to librarians, and they give us resources. They tell us how to put together, like, a formal research paper. And then from there, you get your extended essay.
And, you know, you said you were shocked at the state of the Rochester City School District moving up here from Florida.
Yeah.
Shocked at what? The segregation? What?
I was shocked at, well, what started my project was it was called Why Do Kids Do Bad in School? So I came from the suburbs. Everyone there, they try so hard. Everyone goes to college. That's a given. And then I come here and I see kids, they come to school for lunch, it looked like they were there just to talk to their friends, eat lunch, and then go home. And that shocked me because I wasn't used to that. And I wanted to know why they were doing that. And I found out so much about socioeconomics, which inspired me to go into economics for college. And that was the main thing with Rochester. We're the fifth poor city in the nation. And because of that, that affects our education system. So.
Well, I wish you luck. I think it's really admirable that you're already digging into the research of what causes some of these problems in our own district here. And Teresa, that's probably emblematic of what IB is all about there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these are the people I get to spend my whole day with. I feel so lucky. They're corroborating what the research is really showing for urban education in IB. When these kids go off to college, they're more academically independent. They're risk takers, and they tend to use experimentation to solve problems. They're creative. They take ownership for their learning, and these are all things that run across the IB Foundation.
And you ready for Duke?
Yeah.
Yeah? I mean, it's tough.
Yeah. But I think, with IB, did you mention the IAs? We have these independent internal assessments where every class you have to do like a research paper. And I think that this process alone has prepared me so much for college, because it's like you go to every subject and you have to find a problem that you want to solve, do research about it, and write a paper. So
this hour has flown by. I'm down to my last minute, and I want to ask Teresa what I asked the other teachers, which is, you know, these great programs we're hearing about, can they grow? Should we expect to see more of this in the future?
Yes, we are growing. The district is committed to IB. I think our partners are committed to helping us grow. We partnered with the Memorial Art Gallery. You interviewed Suzanne Curtis in Arts and Focus with the Carl Peters mural. We have plays at Muck. I mean, we are growing. We're going to get bigger. Yes, this is the program for Rochester.
How many suburban districts in Monroe County, for example, have an IB program?
I think about seven.
Okay, so not all of them, certainly not all
of
them.
Yeah. Western New York Consortium of IB Schools has a group of about seven member schools. There's 20, I think, in the consortium. But IB is growing so quickly. This year, they're up about, I think, 4,000 worldwide. 2,000 of those are in the United States.
And now you've got this history at Magnet. You see the results, people like Nadine, Andy. Really interesting stuff. I've had so much fun meeting the students this hour and talking to staff members. And I want to thank them. Good luck to you, Nadine. Continued success at RIT.
Thank you.
Andy, have fun at Duke. And I know you could, honestly, this isn't hyperbole or patronizing. I mean, you can change the world with this kind of research and work we expect you to do it.
So thank you.
Thanks for joining us here. And Teresa, congratulations to you and the IB program there. Again, how many years at Magnet?
Since 2000.
Since 2000.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks
for
sharing the stories. Our thanks to Valerie LaBanca. The engineer of this broadcast is on her last day. And Val, as much as I hate to say it, we're proud of you and I'm happy for you. And I will miss working with you. Kat's here. Thanks, Kat. Thank you, Val LaBanca. Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk with you Friday.